Now stay tuned for the Sunday morning wake-up call on 94.7 WPVC-LP Charlottesville. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Now here's your host, Rick Moore.
And I'm Dan Gould, sitting in for Rick Moore. Rick returns to the program next Sunday. Computers for Kids is celebrating its 15th anniversary this year. The organization, founded in 1998, has trained more than 1,400 youth. Joining us in studio to talk about the organization is Matt Burke. Matt, early on, Matt discovered he was good at having great conversations with kids from the streets. Matt soon became a mentor to these young men and women, and watching them leave crime, gangs, and drugs behind for an opportunity to make art and talk philosophy had a profound effect on him. He has set up a child care center in a formalized education setting, created hip-hop-based educational programs in the most informal of settings, thrown free music and dance jams for young people, trained school district educators, created an employment training program for people with autism and other challenges, and has worked in many capacities as a teacher, from infant rooms to community colleges. Matt is presently the clubhouse manager at Computers for Kids. Matt, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Dan.
Matt, that's quite a long list of accomplishments, and I understand that even before that, you were an entrepreneur before that.
Yeah, that was kind of my introduction into this line of work, I think, accidental as it might have been. I left my own youth and kind of moved into my adulthood as an artist. Interestingly, I'd probably say that it probably saved me from a lot of the trappings and pitfalls of, you know, growing up in the precarious times and places that I was. And I kind of found a path through that. And after myself graduating from high school, I wound up I messed up enough on my own at those times that I closed a lot of doors for myself. But I found options as an artist, and I wound up going to school for music business at the Art Institute, so kind of like a technical school kind of thing, right? When I had found other doors closed, and it set me on a path. And, you know, my intentions were to be a famous hip-hop MC and, and, you know, record label owner. One thing to another, at that time in life, I owned a retail store that we sold everything from records to oils and incense and aerosol art supplies and books. And my consciousness was kind of raising through that, and the culture was in Seattle, and we found that more than selling out and making these great distribution deals and different things through that store, we found that open door that store was leading in a lot of young people, that where it was kind of on a block where there's a lot of kids outside selling drugs, and, you know, there's violence going around the area, and a lot of those kids would wind up leaving what they were doing outside to come in and practice on the turntables that we had. We had a recording studio in the back. They'd come and make music, and then that turned into people sitting around talking about good things. And, you know, I think a lot of the kids that came through that store eventually wound up spending more time inside those doors doing those positive things than they did outside. And maybe their drug dealing businesses started to fail as a result, and their career as artists started to bloom as a result. And I found myself enjoying that aspect more than I did, you know, the haggles of the business. And not that I left it behind, but I kind of found a way for those two things to work together with more of a slant on dealing with youth and community.
So was it kind of an epiphany that you realized you were kind of better working on the outside of retail than on the inside?
Yeah, I think that's a lucky epiphany.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of things I enjoyed about that business in particular. One of them being the freedom, you know, to do what I wanted to do during the day. I was selling the stuff I wanted to sell, but I just seeing the impact too, that simply having turntables at their access, having a recording studio at their access, was making on young people. You know, it wasn't that I was teaching. I was just, there was, those resources were there for them, and watching the effect that had on their lives, I would definitely say it was an epiphany for me and a turning point in how I felt about vocation in life, you know?
Right. And it sounds like your description very much matches up with what Computers for Kids are doing, in fact.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yeah, I think when we were chatting before, you used the term destiny. It's funny, I hadn't thought of that, how full that circle is, I guess, with right. my own life as part of the story. But yeah, that's from that very first time, and then that kind of rambling list that went on about these different things that I've done in different capacities has always had that theme to it, you know, whether it's art and creativity as a tool for growing, you know, right. the young people. Like I said, some of the stuff I did was with adults with developmental disabilities and different things, but that aspect of creativity being throughout all of those different things that I might have done, realizing that it still remained the most consistent, effective tool for growth, you know?
Right.
And those people, and yeah, at C4K, that's the model that we work from.
And speaking of which, from this point onward in the program, I will sometimes abbreviate Computers for Kids with just C4K.
You know, we're it's a good point to make. We're leaning towards C4K rather than Computers for Kids. Yeah, when it began, and I'm sure we'll circle back to that, but when it began, computers were the primary resource that, you know,
right.
were that resource gap for between income levels and the tool that, you know, would allow you to kind of like break into professional industries. And now there's a lot of technology's evolved way past
right.
computers. So there's a lot.
So the emphasis, it's time to shift the emphasis a little bit away from the computer itself to more what that technology has enabled, like 3D printers and vinyl cutters mm-hmm. and all that other stuff that you have out there.
Right. The computer is the centerpiece of a recording studio now, but all of those other components
right.
in that studio are such,
right.
you know.
From your website's mission statement, I just want to read this because I thought it was really interesting. We strive to improve low-income youth's computer and learning skills through caring mentorship, structured training, a vibrant learning environment, and access to a home computer. The program uses computers as a catalyst for youth to challenge themselves, become engaged in their own learning, and realize greater possibilities academically, professionally, and for their community. And the reason I wanted to read that was because this one phrase in here really caught my attention, and that is to become engaged in their own learning.
Mm.
Because it strikes me that so many people give up on learning too soon.
Yeah.
And this idea that you're bringing these youth in or making these facilities available so that youth can become engaged in their own learning, I find that very appealing. How do you do that? How do you get youth to become engaged in their own learning?
I guess a precursor to that by saying it's definitely an issue that I think we're dealing with in our society and the structure that we have for education currently. You have a lot of disengagement, you know, of young people from the educational process. I hear it every day. A lot of young people feel that their education and the information within all of it is forced upon them.
Right.
And it's a hard way to want to engage someone in that process. And ultimately, you know, there's that, if, you know, like you give a man a fish, you know, idea, or you give a man a fishing pole, or it's that idea that, you know, you just, it's a passing on of information, reiteration of that information, and then the process ends is not a completely holistic model, you know. And the idea that ideally what we want to be, I think, as adults is, we want to be continued learners. And I think the way to achieve that is you find a passion in learning. I know as Aristotle said, the man's greatest passion is to learn. I might be butchering that quote and maybe maybe choosing the wrong Greek teacher, but the I think most of humanity we've had access to that, you know, that passion and love for learning. And you know, it's a sad and dangerous thing that we seem to be challenged at societally accessing that passion. And then also the idea of problem solving, self-learning within that. So if we leave the formalized educational process with a passion and a love, fun for learning, and with the ability to find and access resources, mentors, to be able to, you know, like they, you talk about being able to read. You could put the letters together, understand the words, but being able to read between those words and, you know, extract the meanings, the essences of what you're reading, and those things where you can go on by yourself without a teacher, you know, or rather find teachers in everything, everywhere. That's the key. And I guess that's also the precursor, but how we do it at C4K is to offer resources that hopefully will access a latent or a surface passion that the young people come in with. And a lot of that is done through accessing the creative aspects or define the creative within math, you know, even. And by learning through playing with those things, all of these amazing things come to the surface. And also by having those resources, professional level resources, to be able to, you know, if you're into music, to be able to use professional equipment, you find yourself using it successfully with amazing output, which just enhances your passion, you know?
Sure, exactly. It's a long way from our history classes when we were a kid, when the teacher just said, here, memorize these dates and regurgitate them on the test.
Yeah, which I think is still, I think that model still exists in a lot of settings.
I think, you know? It does, yeah. And you can see why so many people, especially older people, have become disengaged from learning, because the learning experience, quite frankly, for a lot of us when we were younger, was unpleasant.
Yeah, yeah.
So what you're doing it really makes a lot of sense. Do you think your model will eventually sort of creep over into the public education system? Is there any hope for that?
I think that's happening. And, you know, I guess I'll credit to, like, I think there's been a process of that happening, you know, prior to us as well. And I'd probably be grandiose for me to, you know, go on calling it our model. We have our, you know, our particular form of that model. Sure. But the part that I think is creeping into education and has been some degree, maybe for some time, maybe not that long, but is part of the education process now, is this idea of open-ended, youth-based, creative-based. You know, it's the Maker Playbook is a book about, you know, this idea of being a maker space and allowing that kind of like free exploration, creation to happen in the educational process. It's published, I forget where, it's an internationally, you know, it's distributed book about that educational model. Monticello High School is referenced in there. They have a recording studio in there. Albemarle High School just opened a recording studio and an audio program that's happening in there. A lot of the schools around Charlottesville, albeit we have a great gift here, and a lot of these things are catching on quicker here, I think, than there's a lot of places that they haven't caught up in that way. But there's engineering programs and 3D printers in a lot of the schools and middle schools around Charlottesville and Albemarle County, which is really hopeful, you know, in my opinion. And I guess finding that way into kind of like cracking through that solid, you know, mortar of what that, you know, the model is of
right.
Pass the information, recite the information,
right.
And that finding its way into the classroom, I think, is trickling in a little slower, but it seems that is happening, and I think it's a great thing.
So this marks your 15th year. You started in 1998. How did it all get started?
So as the story goes, the birth of computers for kids, as it was, the three founders, Meredith Richards, Irvin Cox, and Sarah McConnell, were individuals in community building and business communities around Charlottesville, and had identified a gap, and you know, a lot of what they term as achievement gap, you know, in society is, you know, boils often down to a resource gap. And I think they identified two things, if I heard the story correctly. One of them was a resource gap for computers, which at that time, of course, meant so much more to get access to word processing. You know what I mean?
Right.
It was a huge resource needed for you know, achievement and economically. And I think they also identified that the upgrade process that happens with technology. And so as computers were getting upgraded, the old computers were getting, you know, tossed to the recycling bin or to the dumpsters. And through putting those together and taking those computers that were turning into trash heaps and refurbishing them into creating a functional unit to then give back to people who were, you know, having a need for accessing those resources, that putting computers in the hands of young people, I think, was the original model. And then that started to snowball from there into the different things that could really address that gap.
And now today, again from your website, you have trained more than 1,400 youth, and you extend your services to about 10 new youth a month. I guess that's sort of like a rotating system. You've got 10 people coming in, 10 people going out. I guess you have some limit. You must have some limit on how many students you can handle at a given time.
Yeah, we're constantly thinking about and dealing with that limit. I wouldn't say that we've met that limit. At the end of the school year last year, we found ourselves definitely flexing the capacity of that room and space.
Right.
And what we wound up, it kind of turned into a little bit of a waiting list situation where we had to kind of like funnel people in as we could, you know, kind of make space. We've adjusted some things, and I think kind of address that, but we don't have, a set capacity. It's a fairly, I would say, large space, but I mean, how much we can fit in there. And when we have 40 kids in that clubhouse, there might be 37, 38 different projects going on
right.
at the time. And
right.
it's we want to make sure that we have enough, you know, enough help to be able to push those projects forward, as well as, you know, for us to come and, you know, remind we have power tools in there. You know,
yeah,
we have
sure.
a lot of different
sure.
things in there. And so we're our capacity, you know, is involved in how much we can logistically manage and make sure that it remains an entirely, completely safe space. And so, the 10 kids, number is, you know, it's an average. We kids are constantly bringing their friends in, and we do outreach. And, you know, we had a day at that point at the end of last year where we trained. There was one given day I'd do an orientation for new members as they come in. I think I had 38 members or something like that in the training. I don't know if this is going to be on the number, but it was a full room full of just new members for that month's training. So they come as they come, and we, you know, we make space and adjust and bring in new resources in and help as is needed to you know, facilitate that. And so far we haven't, I would say, hit a capacity yet.
Well, that's good to hear. So after the break, we're going to hear from some of the kids, some of the students over at C4K, including one young lady whose next project is going to be a Pepsi vending machine, and who is very enthusiastic about that. You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. I'm Dan Gould, sitting in for Rick Moore. We'll be right back. We're back with Matt Burke here, and earlier this week, Matt took me on a tour of the C4K facilities, and we're going to run that interview right now. There is a fair bit of background noise, and there's a lot of excitement going on.
That would be C4K for you.
And this interview, Matt leads it, but you'll hear me pop in with some questions for the kids. And it runs about 17 minutes, and then we'll come back and talk to Matt some more.
So we're in an everyday session in the recording studio. We have four members in the studio right now that we just walked into. Michael, who's a longtime member, who does a lot of work with photo, video, a lot of audio stuff. almost getting ready to start learning crab scratches on the turntable. No? Okay, fine.
Learning how to do live streams, starting my own channels on YouTube, so trying to get all those video stuff out while I can learn how to do it here.
Cool. Yeah, yeah. That's Michael's big on video games, so they were doing a lot of
video games,
you say. So he's trying to start a YouTube channel where we capture the screenshots of the video games and then do a commentary over. Would that describe it right?
Yeah.
This is Mina. She's in here listening at the moment. She's a prolific builder by hand. She's working on a dollhouse I'm very excited about with furniture that's been 3D printed and some of it hand designed and painted. It's two story and she can't wait to finish it and show me. Hi, Mina.
Hi.
and Luis in the captain's chair. These guys are actually family members. It's Jamie's second day in. Luis and Jamie are working on something in here. I don't know what you guys want to describe what it is that you guys were doing.
We're just doing songs for Michael can sing to, and this guy can sing to. I'm just over here mixing songs up, playing with this, trying to remix it up.
You guys were working on the Native Instruments machine. Mm-hmm. So you guys were making production for Michael, mm-hmm. working on beats and putting backdrops on him.
So, can we hear anything? Can you do something here for us?
I'll try.
Go for it, man.
Like, this is actually really nervousing, but I'll try.
Sweet
tea.
Hold up, reload up.
Michael, that was good.
Very good. Now, did you come up with that yourself? Is that your creation? Your
I listened to this song a lot named "Sucker for Pain" from Lil Wang Suicide Squad, and I took this one from the beginning to start my songs off. So that's usually what I use to start my songs.
And do you do mashups at all?
I want to try to do remixes of my own type of beats and the beats inside of music. But it's a little kind of hard because I'm not sure if I'm going to get copyrighted for my YouTube channel. So I'm learning to do these kind of things. And I have a YouTube channel. No, I don't upload anything, but I'm going to start uploading, I think, next year. Video games and anything I can.
And how long did it take you to learn how to use? Just for our listeners, we're in a room with a lot of keyboards and speakers. There's a computer system there. There's a drum machine over here. There's a lot of gear in here. How long did it take you to learn how to use all this stuff?
This took me about the machine took me about a week. The two keyboards took me like 2 days. This took me 1 day, and that took me a couple 4 or 5 weeks.
And what is that you're pointing to?
That is some kind of scratcher. You use old CDs, well not CDs, but scratch device, and you can just turn this on and start remixing it. But due to what's happening, it kind of doesn't work a lot, and we don't let nobody touch it unless they have permission by Mr. Matt.
And what's your ultimate goal? What do you hope to achieve when you've mastered all the equipment in this room?
To be able to create my own remix for a song.
That's great. Thanks for talking to us.
This is Samir. Samir works on a wide variety of projects over here, but a lot of them involve real physical stuff mixing with technology. He's with his mentor, John Haverkamp, if you don't mind. He's with his mentor, John Haverkamp, and John is a sculptor who works in physical and digital mediums. And
Samir has been working on creating 3D models on drafting software, printing the pieces. Samir, I'll let you tell about what's, so what's your project?
So we're making a Formula One car like that moves. So it's the first time doing that. So we made the base of the car with wood, but so this is the front part where you put the tires. We're making this out of 3D, and we're gonna make it smooth, and then we're gonna print three more of them and attach it to the car.
Nice. So it's wood. These are 3D printed.
They combine together. And we're also gonna make the chair out of wood, I think.
From the printer.
Yeah, maybe. So after we're done with the project, we might, like, this project is pretty long. So after we made the car, we're gonna test it out, and then we're gonna see if we can make another one that can be controlled by a remote.
So what's that tool you have in your hand you're using right now?
This is a what is it?
It's a Dremel.
Oh, it's a Dremel. It does many things. Like, it can be used for a variety of things, but what we're using it for right now is to smooth, like, the tops of this Formula One's bow thingy.
So you 3D printed the part that you have in your hand there, and now you're using the Dremel tool to kind of clean it up and just make it look really good?
So when you first print it with the 3D printer, it doesn't make it very smooth, so you have to do that yourself. You can do it like with the CISA and stuff like that, but it's easier to use a Dremel.
Now, your mentor is standing over here next to me. Is he a pretty good guy?
Yeah, he's very good with technologies and stuff, and he helps me a lot.
And how has it been working with on this project?
Shmear's great. It's been awesome. We've just dived right in and done a variety of projects already, even though this is just really project one formally. Yeah, and then he'll get done with this, and then he'll do a final project, and he'll get rewarded with a computer provided by the volunteer donation stuff. And then you'll have a computer at home. Sound good? He's nodding, yeah.
And how, I understand the projects are 20 to 40 hours, is that right?
That sounds about right, yeah.
So you have to spend 20 hours with your mentor in order to get the computer, and the whole time that you have to spend with your mentor to be done mentoring is 36 hours.
I see. And are you excited about getting your own computer?
Yeah, I have probably 3 hours left to get my computer.
And when you get it, what are you going to do with it?
Play games.
What else?
That's very exciting. Guys, thanks very much for talking to me.
Okay, so this is Ayana and Paige. They're both working on t-shirt projects that they created, but with several steps to the process. It's been a pretty long ongoing thing for you guys to get these t-shirts. The idea, I think, right, is that you guys are going to produce more of them for the other people in your dance troupe.
Yep.
Go ahead.
It took me 2 days to do this, but today I'm going to finish.
Yeah.
I guess.
And what are the shirts for?
The shirts are for the dance team at Walker Upper Elementary School for our dance team. We're the coaches of the dance team, so we're going to wear shirts for it. And she's finished up my other friend's shirt because she left early.
And did you design the lettering on the shirt yourself?
Yeah, I designed it on a computer. Then I went to another computer and designed it on this thing over here. And then we printed it out and put it on here so I could fly in there and put it on my shirt.
So I'm kind of watching this being done here while we're talking. There's a machine here. It looks like it uses heat or something to.
Yeah. It uses hot heat, so you can't touch it because you'll burn yourself really bad, and it wouldn't look right. You'll have to go to the hospital probably.
Right,
yeah,
too.
Probably go to the hospital.
And after you do the design on the computer, how do you make this? They're kind of transferring it to the shirt here. How do you make that plastic transfer to that you're going to use to print on the shirt?
Well, first it goes through the laminator with the plastic, and you take the blue and black things off, and then you put it onto there with the brown paper on it, and then it comes off with the plastic, so you can pull it straight off, so your words will stick onto your shirt like a real shirt.
And how long did it take you to learn how to do this?
It took me 3 days to learn how to do it, because I didn't really know how to do it by myself, but now I know how to do it by myself.
And what project are you going to do after this one?
After this one, I might do collages. I might build my soda vending machine again, or I might just build a house out of popsicle sticks.
What kind of machine was that?
A Pepsi vending machine.
You're going to make a Pepsi vending machine.
Yep.
That is so cool.
You can see the pieces of it over there, too. It's the start of it is made out of cardboard, tubes, and popsicle sticks. But are you going to use the Arduinos in it to put the little microcomputer controller in it?
Yeah, and I'm probably going to use that app or whatever to get free sodas, I think. And they can deliver the free sodas here so that I can use them for my machine.
And who's going to program the Arduinos?
I don't really know yet. I forgot his name, but he works like on machines and stuff like that. I forgot his name.
I see. So you're going to get a little help with the programming.
Yeah. I might get a little help, but I know most of it myself. I watch on YouTube, then I get on it and start to do it.
That's excellent. Thank you.
This is Tyran's in full control of his public persona. Tyran is actually, this interview might be valuable for upping the stock of the production quality of your show, actually. Tyran is, I'm pretty sure there's going to be really big things for this guy in the future. So he's worthy of an extra introduction. Tyran is one of the members that came to me with a passion and an interest from the moment that we met.
You found me. If it wasn't for you, if it wasn't for this guy, I wouldn't have had any future at all if it wasn't for him. That's why I always have so much respect for him.
I'm pretty sure Tyran would have had a future probably with or without me, but I'm proud to be a part of that process. We met at C4K had a table at a job fair at John Paul Jones Arena, and Tyran and I met, and he stopped by the center the next day, and the first day that we sat down together, he told me, "I want to be a filmmaker and an actor." And Tyran spent the next 8 months after that day writing and polishing a screenplay. This summer, he shot the film with about 30 other members of C4K and also a couple actors from the community for the cast and crew, probably 7 or 8 different locations. The film's at the last stage of editing is 25 minutes long. So Tyran is a filmmaker.
Depending on how much time we have, if it's up to him, I'd probably let you see it. Depending, it's up to him though.
We definitely can share it. You want to tell him what you're working on right now?
I'm working on this. It's a film industry, right, Matt? The filmmakers trying to put in this account. Festival account, and so I can get more views off of my movie. So far, they're going so well. I'm trying to achieve my acting dream.
So how long have you been working on this movie?
8 months.
And when you came to Computers for Kids, was that the thing you wanted to do, or did you discover that when you were here?
I discovered it when I was here. I discovered it.
And so, how did you learn how to make a film? Where did you learn how to do that? I mean, did Matt show you? How did you do that?
Mainly, he showed me. He showed me how to really do all the things, and then I began to pick up all of the movies I've seen over the years and try to do a little. Some I was inspired by them a little bit.
And so, you have a camera, and you take all the raw footage yourself. Do you also do the editing as well?
I'm learning that. I'm not really good at that right now, but I'm trying. I'm trying.
So, your long-term goal is to be a filmmaker, a cameraman, an editor. How do you see yourself in the future?
Mainly an actor. But I do like directing and stuff like that, and creating ideas and creatively.
Well, it certainly doesn't hurt to make a film to understand how to be in one.
Right.
Yeah. I'm making one and being in one, and like it's amazing. Did that answer your question? Okay.
And how long do you think it'll be till you finish your first film?
I don't know, Matt. Are we still working on Hard Life? Are we almost finished with that? Are we still working on that?
Yeah, I think. I appreciate you showing that. So other than what Tyrone's gonna add, I've came behind him and mentored him through the process. Film is something that I'm into too, and but to be clear, every word of the screenplay was written by Tyrone. Tyrone starred in the film, and he directed the film. I helped him out a lot with the editing, and we're just in the process of us deciding when it's done. But
because I thought it was when we but see, since the film festival didn't accept us for whatever because of it's not being so short, so we're trying to find other ones, and I'm happy I've accomplished what I accomplished though too. So, and thank you for that too, Matt.
So you're hoping to get this film in a film festival at some point?
Yeah, I'm really trying. It's very hard because I thought about going to this other one, the Virginia one, but it has to be short, and I don't know how am I ever gonna win with the way I have it, because it's strong. I just don't understand how does a short film get all the good reception or something like that.
The maximum time allotment for the teen portion of the Virginia Film Festival that we intended to enter was 8 minutes. Tyrone's at 25, so we weren't able to quite cut that much off of it. And also, I think you probably safe to say you were really attached to those parts of your story. Yeah, I don't think you ever intended it to be for that short of a piece, and I think that's probably what you're getting at, right?
Yeah, I didn't know it was going to be. I mean, I know it's not as long as if a Ryan Reynolds one kind of one, mm-hmm. but I didn't know it was that long. I really didn't know, because when you go in there and watch it, don't you think, Matt, that it doesn't feel so long when you go in there? Remember when they watch this, does it feel as if it's that long?
No, it doesn't. I think you packed in the things that you wanted to have in there, and all of the points that are in the story are crucial and intended. So I think it's one of the things that I would be most proud of if I was in your shoes is every, all of his points reconnect, all of his circles come back around, his references match up with each other in the story. So like you did what you intended to do with that story. So yeah, and it's been a challenging exercise talking about how to trim down what your baby.
Gentlemen, thanks so much for talking to us. We're back live in the studio with Matt Burke, live and in person rather than being recorded. And Matt, two things stuck out in my mind after touring your facility. The first was, there is so much going on. I mean, there are people, there are kids absolutely everywhere. And they're so totally engaged in what they're doing. The second thing that stuck with me was how respectful, I thought, all the students were of the adults that were in the place. It's not, hey, you, it's either Matt, and for many of the kids, Mr. Matt, which I take as a sign of respect.
Yeah, you know, that feels really nice to hear. I think, you know, what we're actually doing with creating a space like that, like we said, like giving experiences and resources to young people to come in there and leave as motivated self-learners with a passion that they've accessed, and you know, like that's huge. I would even say on a subtle level, and what's happening there and how it goes to benefit each individual that comes there and society and the community around it, is creating an area where it's a safe space, where positivity and respect are the centerpieces of that space, and that area is probably a very important thing for the world that we're living in. And it's big. It's big for me in particular, and all the staff at C4K feel that same way. That you know, I put small. There's not a lot of rules in that place. There's very few rules. It's funny. One of my things, and the kids tease me for it too. I ask them all to not say shut up. Right. And even a lot of them, it's a joke, you know what I mean? Shut up. You know, it's a small, if any of them listen to this interview, they're going to be like, Mr. Matt said, shut up. But, Tyrone will love it too, that we just heard. But, my point behind it is, if you, even if you're saying it jokingly, having that
word that's shutting someone down, not flying around that space, is it's a meditation on respect, you know? And if each time that word goes to leave your lips, you think about it, you flex that muscle, you know, that's that tool that we use to show respect. And part of that is also, you know, it's being of that mind state, you know, which is compassionate, and it's considering the person next to you and the room around you and the community that is part of. And part of it, it's code switching, you know, and the more you can control yourself and your language like that, the more doors you can walk through in life. So, I'm really proud of them and of that space that it does. That's what it feels like when you go in there. There's an air of respect and positivity, and I think that's a really important, really beautiful thing.
When we come back, we'll hear from Kelly Flynn, who is going to talk about the mentoring program at C4K. You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7 WPVC, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. I'm Dan Gould, sitting in for Rick Moore. We're back with Matt Burke from Computers for Kids, an organization dedicated to bringing technology to underserved youth in Charlottesville and Albemarle County. Matt, I wanted to sort of pick up where we left off before we heard from the students. And I was wondering whether there are any other organizations or chapters elsewhere locally or in the country that are doing similar things and that you have a connection to.
I'll go into the Clubhouse, the educational model and the program that we're running out of C4K has clubhouses all around the world. But before mentioning that, I'll also say there's some Charlottesville is, again, we're gifted in a lot of ways. And, there's some very, really amazing programs here too from, MRC that offers recording and musical training to young people in Charlottesville, the music recording, Music Recourse Center, and Lighthouse Studios that offers film training to young people, and with Bernard Hankins at Ryman Design, a program that uses, it's like a think tank for marketing branding concepts that uses improvised rap and hip hop as a brainstorming technique. There's a lot of really, really, it's bad going down the list because there's so many people to leave out from that, but we're very resourced in Charlottesville, which is an incredible thing. But also the model, the clubhouse model of who we, what we use, it's an interesting story and progression for what it is. It began out of the program at the MIT Media Lab, the Massachusetts Institute of Technology, this huge behemoth, prestigious place where in this particular program in the Media Lab at MIT, it's called Lifelong Kindergarten. There's a group of geniuses who sit around and play with Legos and come up with amazing creations through it. And they realize that by having those resources at their access and by playing, they were, you know, accessing part of their brilliance, and really incredible creations would come out of that. And they decided to try to create a model and a program to extend that into young people, and in particular, young people who are challenged with accessing the resources that it would take to be able to, you know, carry that out. And they opened the first clubhouse in the Museum of Science in Boston. And as time went on, they created a funding system to be able to put that model, to assist that model in being created in different host organizations around the world. So now at this point, there's over 100 clubhouses in different host organizations, from C4K to Boys and Girls Club to the County of Fairfax to one in Museo de los Niños in Bogota. They're all over the world. And yeah, it's really incredible. We every 2 years, one of the resources that Clubhouse Network offers is called Teen Summit. And every 2 years, they'll have a conference where all of the clubhouse coordinators from around the world will bring three members from each of their clubhouses, and they'll have this conference where they work on different disciplines, from music, video game creation, to podcasting and radio. And then they'll have meetings and a bunch of different stuff. So we went there, and three of our young people from Charlottesville met up with, you know, these people from Bogota, from South Africa, from New Zealand, from Australia, from Ireland, from, you know, from Ethiopia. There is a clubhouse in Israel and a clubhouse in Palestine. And the coordinators and the members might have lived, you know, a mile from each other.
Wow.
But yeah, might as well be a million miles. But through this clubhouse network, they met for the first time, not only created friendships, but made music together, literally, you know. And that network is still growing, and this model is creating these same kind of incredible results all around the world.
I've been thinking while I'm, you know, reading through your material, and I'm wondering how, you know, when I saw the clubhouse and saw how engaged the kids were, I'm sure it doesn't start off like that for every student that comes in, every kid that comes in. At some point, early on, I assume you have to develop trust, trust relationship with these kids. How do you get started with that?
Yeah, I mean, that's a very, very, that's a great observation. Trust probably would be one of the biggest things that probably would allow growth to happen in there. Is to trust the space, to trust me as the facilitator inside the space, and the other mentors and adults that come in there, to trust us as, you know, the people who created C4K, to be able to be bringing good and positive people in their life. And I would say that the basis of where that trust comes from is that our relationship begins with me offering, us as C4K, offering respect to them. And that's shown in the version of, you know, putting the reins into their own hands. Like I said, there's very few rules. And when they come in, my only, aside from it being a positive, respectful space, is the only expectation is that you create while you're there. And, you know, I don't have rules that say, like, what, you can't ever check your Facebook while you're in there, you can't take your free time while you're in there. You know, they mostly dictate what's done with their time, and what they create is all up to them. And then, you know, you have that challenge also, that, you know, we heard from Tyran earlier. Tyran, the first day I met him, he knew he wanted to make films. You know, some of the folks that come in there because their friends are in there, you know. And, you know, there's never been a fight in C4K. You know, we don't worry about things being stolen or walking away. You know, like, it's safe like that. And part of the reason is their space, they protect it. And one part of the reason is because the things that they do, they're truly engaged in. And, you know, a lot of behaviors that come out of human beings come from idleness, you know?
Right.
And so, you know, it's really important that everyone who's in there is, you know, engaged to a proper degree. And so, you know, part of that challenge is finding someone who maybe didn't come in there with that, you know, that idea of what they want to do already, and helping them find something that they're passionate about. And, you know, like, that's part of the thing that probably is a big challenge in life for people, and trying to, like, you find something that you care about, and if you don't have it, you know, you're prone to idleness in general as an adult, you know, and it probably leads to a lot of other social problems and issues. And if you do have it, you know, you have this focus. And so, you know, through those conversations, through throwing prompts out and things at the wall, and to see, like, what is it, by, and then sometimes funneling that idea that you want to sit around and watch basketball clips all day long. It's you know, the thing that you're into doing. And then the idea from shifting, and this is a big clubhouse thing, from shifting from being a consumer of media to being a producer of media. And you could take those basketball clips, edit them on Adobe Premiere into a highlight reel of your own, make your own logo, slap it on there, and maybe do a little voiceover to it, and use those equipment in there. And now, not only you're still watching clips all day, you know, and doing what you enjoy just for fun, but you're also producing something from it that could be your job, you know, at some point.
Now, Computers for Kids also has an extensive mentoring program, which is headed up by Kelly Flynn. Kelly has an interest in the positive power of mentoring relationships, especially after graduating as a double WHO from the University of Virginia with a degree in psychology and a master's in education and educational psychology, applied developmental sciences. Wow, that's a mouthful. I spoke with Kelly earlier this week at the facility, and I began by asking her for an overview of the mentoring program.
So, the Computers for Kids one-to-one mentoring program, it's a relationship that lasts between 9 months and a year, and it's between our members, which are middle school to high school students, and mentors who are various folks from the community and students, and they are matched male to male and female to female, and they go on a journey of where they get to know each other for the first 10 sessions, and they work on two complex projects, sometimes one giant complex project. And in the middle, at around 20 hours, the member actually earns their home computer. So they're gaining it through the work they're doing with their mentor. And that's it on a general scale, but there is some other fun pieces that kind of form along the way that are not necessarily in the training or that you learn when you first join here. It's the magic that happens along the way that's not on paper.
Right, and I understand that the mentoring process is not just about technology. It's more than that. Can you talk to that a little bit?
Yeah, and I think so. You know, you can easily get hung up on the goal of the project and what materials we need and what's step one and step three and, you know, the end product. But I've had the joy of, again, experience that the magic that maybe the mentor or the member doesn't see right away, because I can take that approach when I'm a top-down view, that you see relationships of trust develop or friendships blossom between an adult and a middle school, high school student that maybe they didn't even expect to see coming themselves. And I think, especially with our students, where they're kind of learning what does it mean to have a mentor? What do I do with my mentor? What are they really here for? Or how is this different from my teacher or, you know, or coach? So there's a new relationship forming that they don't necessarily intend to gain, but that you can, it's really fun to kind of watch behind the scenes and kind of share stories with their mentors that, oh, you didn't know such and such said something when you weren't here that we never heard them say before, or seen them kind of even grow in their academics that maybe the mentor doesn't always see, but it's kind of fun for the staff to witness that magic.
Now, the projects are all hands-on, I understand. Can you give me some examples of some current projects that are being mentored right now?
Yeah, absolutely. So even when you walk in the space, there are remnants of projects, those that are works in progress and those that have been finished. So, for example, we have a pair who constructed their own version of Big Ben. So constructed all out of popsicle sticks and hot glue. But he also wired it to have a working elevator. He wired it with LEDs and an actual clock that runs on battery. But that was all because he is an architect in his own right. And I was like, why not create my own version? We have a pair that was really interested in making things fly. So they created their own plane out of foam board and actually is remote control. And right now they're onto rockets using rubbing alcohol. So again, like, just kind of like, why not try this thing that I'm really interested in that I would have never maybe tried at home, but now that C4K has given me the green light to do it, and now we have things flying and clocks ticking.
And I understand that a big part of the thrust of the mentoring process is that projects need to get completed, that students need to understand that finishing is important. Do I have that right?
Yeah, and I've found too that it's even more compelling in the sense that it's something they're coming up with. So again, like thinking of the rocket idea, like it's not a homework assignment. It's like you came into C4K, you walked in that door, you wanted to make something shoot up in the air. Now let's take it from start to finish. Now let's not gather random things and make it fly in one day. Let's actually plan it. Let's do some research and make sure we have the right percentage of rubbing alcohol and why does this one work better than the next. It's actually thinking it out and not just gathering things and putting something that's not your best work. We want to make something where you can show off to your parents and now you can maybe take it to show other folks in the community. And so they do go through planning and evaluation forms to kind of get their mind thinking like, yeah, this is my idea, but I can also think about it on a scale that's quality work that I can display on a grand scale.
And did you find some of the students are just so keen they want to jump to the end?
Literally coming in, once they let out of school and they're coming down the hill from the bus, they're running in, yelling that they have project ideas. So they're signing in, you know, not even necessarily getting to snack or, you know, they're jumping right into, like, I'm ready to do X. Do we have the materials to do so? So it's absolutely right away as soon as they're in the door.
Now, I understand that one of the more exciting aspects of the program is the students, once they complete their project, can earn a computer, a laptop computer, that they can keep. Tell us about that.
Yeah, so we were distributing desktop computers. So we moved up in the world, and now we're giving laptops, which is, you know, exciting because they get laptops at school, but these are theirs. If anything goes wrong, they can still bring it in and, you know, maybe even learn how to fix it here at C4K. But they earn it after about 20 hours of mentoring, so about after they finish their first project. So, again, they created something that they wanted to make, but they also finished it in a way that we planned it and we evaluated it. And it's just, you know, sometimes you even find that after about 20 hours, they've even forgotten that that's, you know, a part of it. So their eyes light up even more, like, oh, yeah, I created this cool thing that maybe flies or ticks now, but I also get my own laptop out of it. And maybe I kind of know some cool things to do on it now with that my mentor and I have worked on.
We're going to talk a little bit more about funding and so on. Tell us a little bit about the laptops. Where do they come from? I understand that they're refurbished. Is that done here?
Yeah. Yep. So we have a long-term volunteer who comes in every day the same amount of time as our full-time staff and works really hard on making sure everything's up to date and that as soon as the student receives their computer, it's ready to go. And the computers really come from all over. We have local organizations in town and local businesses in town that donate as an organization. But we also have various students and old mentors or donors or folks who just kind of heard about us and pop in all the time to donate their used computers. And then we get them back up to par and ready for the students to use at home.
Now, when the student completes his project, there's some kind of a ceremony or graduation. Tell us about that.
Yeah, and so also, too, the cool thing that our space has transformed so much that, again, as you're walking in, you see remnants of projects. We've moved from a more formal graduation to more of a showcase setting where it's in our own space here at C4K, so we invite parents, your friends, any family friends, and we display the work in the space that the student is spending, you know, 4+ hours a day at. And then so when they're walking in, they're not only seeing the student's project, you're meeting the mentor, and now you're seeing the two projects you worked on in the space you worked on in. And so you can show them the tools you use, or this is the corner where we put Big Ben together. So it's more of like showcasing not only the finished product, but here's the cool space I made it in, and here are the cool tools and items I used to make it.
And I'll bet the students are really proud of what they've built with their own hands. Would that be fair to say?
I absolutely agree. I think, again, as our space is transforming and we're expanding to include more STEAM activities, which is science, technology, engineering, arts, and math. Again, so the sky is kind of the limit in terms of the projects they're creating. So as they get more and more open with the things they want to create, they seem to identify more with them. I think our doors and windows are open to more wild project ideas. So they're identifying with these things that we hadn't even thought of. So they're bringing in these ideas. I'm like, why not? So I think not only are they excited that they're identifying with this product that they've made on a different level.
And after graduation, what happens? Do you know if any of your students go on to more education in technology or careers in technology? And what about the ongoing relationship with the mentor?
Yeah, I've actually, in my time here, have seen a few alum come back from four-year colleges or two-year colleges, even here at PVCC, where they pop in all the time, big smiles. And again, they're walking in and seeing this space as it's transformed since they started in middle school, high school. So we do have students who have gone on to two-year, four-year colleges or straight to careers. But also they come in and ask about their mentors. They remember small details from years ago. They come and tell me stories, and I haven't necessarily even met the mentors, but they're remembering things that have either encouraged them to go to school or encouraged them to do a career that's, whether that's in technology or not, but just like they remember little pieces that you wouldn't necessarily think about. And I absolutely have pairs who have relationships with their students' parents and family, so they meet outside of C4K and do things that are involved with their parents. Folks that keep in touch via Skype and email, like across, who are no longer in Charlottesville. So I absolutely see relationships that go beyond these doors right here. And I think, you know, that's all, the foundation is starting right here at C4K. So the fact that it's strong enough to be in these students who are now alum in college, it's pretty exciting to witness.
Kelly, thanks so much for talking to us.
Thank you so much. Thanks for the opportunity.
We're back in the studio live with Matt Burke, and Kelly was talking a lot about the mentoring program. Are you still looking for mentors?
Yeah. That's we are always accepting mentors. Some of the mentors come back and work with me in Clubhouse, and some of them work, like she was talking about, in the one-on-one mentorship relationship. And it's one of the things I love the most about that place is I feel like we can, like, that it's operated in, so much of it happens because of what people give to C4K. But I've never been real good at selling junk to people, you know. A sales never worked out for me in life, but pitching that to people is, I feel like there's so much offered in return. Everyone walks in and out of that place happy. So, yeah, we are always taking mentors.
Thanks so much to Matt Burke, Kelly Flynn, and all the students at Computers for Kids who participated in today's program. Thanks also to Jeff Leonard for running the board for us today. You can listen to this and every episode of the Wake Up Call at cvillepodcast.com. Rick Moore returns next Sunday at 11 a.m. with guest UVA professor Sidney Milkus, who will be talking about the history of elections. Coming up at noon on WPVC, it's El Club del Sabor. For the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, I'm Dan Gould. Thanks for listening.
This has been the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call on 94.7, the progressive voice of Charlottesville. The Wake-Up Call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel and the markets of Tiger Fuel. Production assistance and engineering from Sean McCord and Mike Friend. Be sure to join Rick next Sunday morning at 11 a.m. for the Wake-Up Call, only on WPVC-LP Charlottesville.